This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Dara Cass, editor-in-chief of Feminem.
And I'm Jenny Beck Esme, the other editor-in-chief of Feminem.
So, hi, Jenny. Welcome. I'm so glad you stayed up to do these recordings with me after last night.
Yeah, I had a whirlwind of a night shift, and here I am, but it's all good.
God bless flu season. All right. So first and foremost, let's do our announcements. Do we have any announcements from the Feminem Conference for 2018?
We did have a big week. Last week, we announced our speaker lineup, and we are so excited. If you were living under a rock this week and missed it on Twitter, get on.
Or working overnights.
Or working overnights in flu season like me. Get yourself on our website. Check out our speaker lineup. It is amazing. Our speakers are already hard at work getting their talks ready for you. So go and check them out. We're super excited, and so are they.
Yeah, this is going to be very cool. I'm already more excited for this year than I was for last year. And I think that that's a testament to the hundreds of submissions we had and really just extraordinary speakers we have lined up.
It's so exciting.
So speaking of extraordinary speakers, this talk that we're going to do today is one of my most, I would say my favorites, but I think that's the wrong word. It was the most important, one of the most important talks we had. I had emailed Janice after I had seen an article that she wrote. Janice Ford Baker is the assistant director at Our Lady of Lourdes Emergency Department in Camden, New Jersey. And she wrote an article for ASAP Now on being a Black woman physician that I just thought was really powerful. And so I emailed her and said, would you give a talk at our conference? And this was before we were planning ASAP, Fix 17. And so the talk she gave, which she titled MD Does Not Stand for Mammy Doctor, is both important and moving. And I really hope that you all listen to it and take something away from her extraordinary talk. So without further ado, Dr. Baker talking about what MD does not stand for.
So I don't have any financial disclosures. And I'm very happy to be here because I ran into that force of Dara Cass at ASAP many years ago. We met at one of the AWEP meetings. And last fall, I wrote an article for ASAP Now. And after reading the article, Dara called me and asked me to come present at the conference. So I think it's only right that I share with you a few of the paragraphs from the article. It was my usual day in the emergency department at a busy community hospital with 55,000 annual visits. Midway through my shift of seeing abdominal pain, headaches, and febrile infants, the medic phone rang. They were bringing in an altered elderly patient with fever and low blood pressure. The medics arrived, and as I walked into the room, my team was already placing IVs, attaching monitors, and taking vital signs. I introduced myself as Dr. Ford Baker, and the patient said, "Get away from me, you Black person," with disdain dripping off her voice. Time stopped. I was instantly flooded with memories of similar encounters of hate and prejudice because of melanin, having to state which Ivy League schools I attended and how long I've been in practice, being asked if I'm really the assistant director of the department, and having to mention to patients and family members over and over that I am in fact the physician who has been taking care of them for the past 3 to 4 hours. Only a second had passed. I breathed, and I explained that I am her doctor and will be caring for her. My team supported me and informed the patient that she was getting the best care possible, and she did. This patient was treated with the same high quality of care I provide all of my patients, but inside, I felt disrespected, enraged, and diminished. Disrespected, enraged, and diminished. So as physician scientists, we like to think that we're practicing medicine and treating our patients with science purely and objectively. In fact, when we start medical school, it starts with the first basic medical science for the first 2 years. We learn human physiology, which is basically the study of the biology of the human body and the functions and how it works. And then once we get that framework, we go to our third and fourth years clinically and apply it to patients. And we think as doctors, when we're going and caring for patients, that we're doing this in an objective way and that we're doing this to our best ability, having science backing us up. But I think if we take a historical view, will see that it's not just science and it's not just objectiveness that's put into the institution of medicine. So the Human Genome Project took place between 1990 and 2003, and the whole human DNA was sequenced. And genetically speaking, if we look at race as a category, we know that in one race, there is actually more genetic variability than there is between races. However, we characterize diseases based on race every day. And when we do this, we are supporting the notion that race, a social construct developed so that one group can have economic gain and social gains while making another group be inferior, is biologically correct. So we ourselves are practicing scientific racism. And I'll take a historical view to support this claim. From the 19th and 18th centuries, when medical education was developed in this country, scientific racism has been the underlying pinnings. This is a picture of Robley Dunglison, and he was a British physician that came over to help start medical education at the University of Virginia. He's notable because he was coined the term the father of American physiology. So the same physiology where we're studying the biology of how the body works and how the different systems interact with each other, he's the father of this. So gave the basic instruction to all medical students starting in our medical education in the 1800s. His textbook was called Human Physiology. And written in his textbook, it states, "This race, and that's people who look like me, is evidently of a less perfect organization than the last, and have some characteristics that approximate it more to the monkey kind." If you weren't racist entering medical school at this time, you surely would start to have racist thoughts, because here the science is backing you up and confirming these ideals. If we look at the textbooks, these are images from Robley Dunglison's textbook. And here you see images that were drawn to show the different races, Negro, Mongoloid. And if you read under figure one, it says, "Dunglison considered Negroes inferior, alleging they held a middle place between the Caucasian and the orangutan." If you look at the table to your left, you'll see here, race mixing was even considered scientific, where it had to be documented how many drops of black blood you had in your genetics or in your biology. And this is what was inside a human physiology textbook. Now, we can't be blind to think that science and medical education is happening in a vacuum. This is happening as slavery is going on. So we see here, science is used to support slavery. It's used to explain why it's okay to enslave millions of people and have them be subservient to one race of people. Now, Robley Dunglison is not the only one that supported these scientific racism facts, or myths, I should say. Many names that we've heard, all as we went through our education, undergrad, and medical school. Anton von Leeuwenhoek, for father of microscopy. We've all heard those names. Marcello Malfigi, father of histology, and there are even Malfigi tubules and things that we study in school, they also supported scientific racial myths of inferiority between races. And even James Marion Sims, the father of modern gynecology, who developed the procedure for fixing vesico-vaginal fistulas, which is still used today in practice. He practiced on enslaved women, enslaved black women, many of them who died during his experiments, and many of them who did not die, all of them did not receive any anesthesia while he practiced on them. But yet we are still benefiting from the advances in the procedures that was done. Now, all this supported slavery, as I mentioned before. And so it's not only in the education, but even in the classification of diseases where we see scientific racism penetrated. Drapetomania here, and I don't know if you can read the bottom part of the slide, drapetomania is a mental illness that caused slaves to run away. So So imagine it's a disease, something is wrong with you. You have a mental defect if you decide not to stay in bondage, if you decide not to be whipped, if you decide not to take back-breaking labor, if you decide not to be separated from your family. You had a mental disease. Here are a few of lexicons of Negro diseases that were also created during this time, and the scientific community, the medical community, led credence to it. So drapetomania, as we discussed, the disease causing Negroes to run away. Because after all, we're of the monkey kind, so why would we want to run away? We would need some sort of master. Typhoid pneumonia, a severe form of pneumonia particular to Negroes. And maybe it's more severe because no one cares about you, no one's giving you adequate treatment, maybe because you're working back-breaking labor, and that's why you're going to have a more severe disease form. But in this case, we're using race as a biological category to explain the reason why you're suffering from these quote-unquote diseases. Cachexia africana, dirt eating, because you're malnourished and you have no iron, but something's wrong with you, so we'll put a wire mask or iron gags for treatment. And struma africana, the Negro consumption, somehow to be different than consumption than anyone else gets. So here we see how in medical education, we have supported scientific racism where there is no truth for it. But even outside of medical education, we could turn to our medical societies. The American Medical Association was founded in 1847. In 1865, slavery was abolished, and the AMA still maintained discrimination. It was only until 1965 that they allow their black colleagues to enter the AMA. Think about that, 1965. In 1910, Abraham Flexner did a survey of all the medical schools in the country. This survey included also black medical colleges. And he recommended that all but two black medical colleges close down. With this recommendation, it led to lack of funding for the other medical colleges. And the two that he recommended, Howard and Meharry, are still the only two black medical colleges now. Do you guys know how many physicians in the United States are black? It's 3%. And it's been the same since the 1900s. Having lack of access to education blocks the availability for everyone to move up. So here we see scientific racism also affecting our American medical societies, and then also affecting the chance and the economic gains for a group of people to advance. But it's not only with the AMA in our societies. When I look at this picture, I see people here that look like my father. I see people here that look like my uncles. They're a little older than my brothers and my husband, and they look like my friends. But these men here were subjects in the Tuskegee study trial. The full-length term for this trial was the Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis in the Negro male. And this occurred, it started in 1930 and went on until 1970. Here again, just by that title, it confers that race is a biological category. There has to be something different between a white person and a black person, so therefore we should study syphilis in the black Negro male in order to see its life cycle. Now, this study was conducted by the United States Public Service, a governmental agency. And what they did is they enrolled 600 men. 200 of them did not have syphilis, 400 did. They lied to them and told them that they would receive treatment for syphilis, and they were not treated. Even in the 1940s, when an easy, simple cure for syphilis was found with penicillin, they did not treat these men. But they went as far to tell the men that they were treated. Many of these men believed that this study would only last 6 months, but it ended up lasting 40 years. Many of these men went on to pass the disease on to their wives. And some of these wives passed it on to their children as one of the torch infections that can be passed along that we know about. and they never got treated. In this study, the United States public government actually recruited black doctors and black nurses to go out and get participants to the study, also not telling them the truth of what they would be doing in the study. So thereby further disenfranchising the African American community to the House of Medicine. The details of this study only broke free when a whistleblower went to the New York Times, and then this was in the newspapers, and that's when the trial was stopped. So here we see examples of scientific racism entering our research. And this is the history of the House of Medicine that we all sit and participate in. Now recently, and I know a lot of people probably have heard about this study, and this was done by Hoffman et al. In 2016. It looked at racial bias in pain assessment and treatment recommendations and false beliefs about biological differences between blacks and whites. Now what was interesting in this study is that Dr. Hoffman and her group, in the first part of the study, used lay people, so not medical professionals, white people, and asked them about these beliefs. The ones that are bolded are false. And some of the questions they asked were, blacks age more slowly than whites, or blacks people's blood coagulates more quickly than whites. The second part of the study, though, was asked of medical students and residents. So first years, second years, third years, and residents. And what's interesting is that you can look and see that there are some beliefs that are held that are biological differences that are not true, and held even by medical students, medical professionals, that will go out and treat people. One of them, such as black people's blood coagulates more quickly than others, or black skin is thicker than whites. And this was done in 2016. So these are beliefs that are held now and today. The next part of her study looked at these beliefs, but then looked at the medical providers and saw, would it change their practice style? And what they looked at is looking at how would they rate a patient's pain, and then how would they treat that patient's pain. Now, the study used the same exact cases. They would both be individuals that may have fallen and broken their arm, or both individuals that would have suffered from a kidney stone. And all they did was change the names, so one name sounded more white, like John, and one name sounded more black, like Deshaun. Of the individuals that held low beliefs, meaning that they did not believe a lot of these fictitious myths about black people, we see that there still was a variance in their pain rating for the patients in slide A or in graph A. But if we look to graph B, if they had low beliefs, their prescription or their treatment management was about the same when they held low beliefs, so low myths. But if they held high beliefs, endorsed these false beliefs of biological differences between blacks and whites, their treatment plans were different, where they treated black patients' pain less and white people's pain more. It's important to understand our history and what I've talked about earlier so we could understand that scientific racism is pervasive but maybe elusive. That maybe when we practice medicine, it is not so pure and objective. And maybe when we use race as a biological category, that is condoning racism. This is a question that my colleague sent me because she's taking her board review. She took it, I think, a week ago. And here's a sample question. A 55-year-old male presents with acute left-sided flank pain. Which of the following increases the likelihood that the patient's pain is due to acute uretrolithiasis as opposed to another black etiology? And race, black race, is a choice to choose. Of course, it's not the correct answer, but even having it up there as a choice, again, is confirming that there is some biological reason, some biological difference for races, and it's then making us feel okay to categorize disease based on race alone. So racism is there, but it's not a biological category. We know it's a social construct. And I think that when we look at our interactions with our patients, like I had with that patient who wanted me to get away, It's easy to see racism when a patient all but calls you the N-word when you're trying to take care of her. But I think we have to open our eyes and see racism in the foundation, in the House of Medicine, in our medical education, in the way that we approach our studies, the way that we approach our medical thinking and our plans. Now, it would be naive to think that race plays no role in this, but I think what we need to do is put race in its correct place. It's a social construct, so it's a social determinant of health, not a biological category. Social determinants of health are the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age. These circumstances are shaped by the distribution of money, power, and resources at global, national, and local levels. They are mostly responsible for health inequities. This is the framework in which we should put race. So not just because someone is Black that they have an increased risk for high blood pressure, diabetes, or stroke. Because if you look at me as a Black woman, I would have increased risk for that by our traditional framework. But if we look at it based on the distribution of money, power, and resources, I have money, I have power, I have resources. My risk factor for those diseases are different than another Black woman. And we need to be able to look at this correctly. Because yes, we're physicians and we're caring for patients and we want to be pure and objective, but we have to be mindful of the social milieu that patients are living in, that we are living in. We have to be mindful of our social bias. And I hope then we can go on and stop the practice of medical racism. Thank you.